Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, TV and film critic Sharonda Williams is here to chat about this year's Golden Globe nominations. The virtual awards show is taking place on Sunday, February 28th at 8 p.m. on NBC. I'll also be talking to director Rebecca Hall about her new film, Passing, which addresses colorism in New York's 1920s. And closing out the show is my exclusive with Judas and the Black Messiah star Lakeith Stanfield. I'll also be playing music from the film's soundtrack featuring her and throwback sounds from Mr. Cheeks and the late Natalie Cole. But first, here's a message from the High Museum of Art.
Support for WCOK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting an exhibition of the life and legacy of Georgia native David Driscoll now through May 9th, 2021. The exhibition showcases Driscoll's painting and printmaking practices and 60 works of art spanning 7 decades of his career as an artist, curator, and scholar. Time tickets are required. More information is available at high.org.
This is Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
They don't care nothing about me. All they want is my voice. Well, I done learned that. And they're gonna treat me the way I want to be treated, no matter how much it hurt them. They back there right now calling me all kinds of names. Calling me everything but a child of God. But they can't do nothing else because they ain't got what they wanted yet.
You just heard the voice of Oscar-winning actress Viola Davis as the mother of the blues Ma Rainey in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. The beloved actress of stage, film, and screen is just one of the many big names nominated for a Golden Globe this year. The virtual awards show is airing live on NBC Sunday, February 28th at 8 p.m. And here to chat about the rest of the nominees, the snubs, and more is African-American Film Critics Association member Sharonda Williams.
Let's get into a few of these nominations. As I had mentioned, this year's show is a virtual show, but we're really excited about these nominations. And I want to start with Best Performance by an Actress in a Motion Picture. And get this, you've got Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, as well as Frances McDormand for Nomadland, and Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. Who is your winner?
Now, you know I'm finna ride with Viola. Stop playing.
Really?
Yes. I mean, I think if I look at it from, you know, I can't, you know, be like, I'm rooting for everybody black. But right. If I'm looking at it from, I think Viola has the name power, right? You know, when they see Viola Davis, they know that she always brings in a powerful performance. And I think everyone remembers the monologue that she gives in Ma Rainey's Bottom. But that's not to say that she doesn't have stiff competition. Everyone loved Carey Mulligan's performance in Promising Young Woman, which was, she did a really fantastic job. And I don't think people should sleep on Vanessa Kirby either for her performance in Pieces of a Woman. But I think right now, the consensus right now is that it's Viola Davis's to win.
Well, I must say I'm going to root for Andra Day. I really loved her performance in The United States versus Billie Holiday. I mean, she really embodies Billie Holiday. This is her first time performing, but I hope that she can get a little bit of, get some love this year for this performance, because I really felt that she, and don't get me wrong, I love Viola Davis, loved her role as Ma Rainey in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And I like Frances McDormand. I mean, I think she's just, you know, just an amazing actress. But I'm going to root for Andra Day.
I mean, it's a stat, Kay. I'm here for Andra Day. She did fantastic in New United States versus Billie Holiday. And I can't sleep on Frances either. You know, she just recently won a few years back for 3 Billboards. It's a really tough category this year. When I say that Best Actress is a stat category, and it's really anyone's to win. That's just my prediction with Viola, but I think that everyone is very deserving that's been nominated.
Let's get into Best Performance by an Actor in a Motion Picture Drama. You've got, is it Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal, Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Anthony Hopkins, of course, for The Father, Gary Oldman for Mank, and Tahar Rahim for The Manchurian. You know, that's a hard one because Anthony Hopkins, icon, Gary Oldman, icon, and of course, Chadwick Boseman did an amazing job in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, but who's your pick for this one?
Ooh, this has been tough for me. I remember seeing Anthony Hopkins in The Father before the world ended at Sundance last year. And as soon as I saw the film, I was like, this is Anthony's Oscar this year. This is his to win it. Given the, you know, the passing of Chadwick Boseman, may he rest in peace. But his performance, this is literally a performance of a lifetime. One of the best performances from Chadwick Boseman that I've ever seen. So I honestly feel that I think Chadwick is going to take it. If there is anyone who had the opportunity to beat him performance-wise, is Anthony Hopkins. But I really think that this is Chadwick's to win.
So let's get into these best performances by an actress in a supporting role. You've got Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy, Olivia Colman for The Father, Jodie Foster for The Manchurian, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Helena Zengel for News of the World. Who's your pick for this one? Because I'm old school. I love Glenn Close.
Now they know they owe Glenn Close her flowers, especially after they disrespected her and then gave her the Oscar for The Wife. I'm going to say that this Glenn Close is to win. A lot of people are upset about the nomination in the first place, but I'm going to ride with Glenn. I'm going to ride with my girl Glenn. I can't lose with her.
And let's talk about the guys, because this one is a very tough category as well. Best performance by an actor in a supporting role. You've got Sacha Baron Cohen for The Trial of the Chicago Seven, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, Jared Leto for The Little Things, Bill Murray on The Rocks, and then Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami. So I want to know, Sharonda, because that one to me is really, really tough.
Yeah, so this is really tough. You know, when I saw Judas and the Black Messiah, I was like, this is Daniel Kaluuya's award to win. However, looking at predictions and, you know, people in commentaries in the awards race, a lot of people have their money on Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami. I'm not mad about it. If I really sit back and look, for me, if it was my choice, is Daniel Kaluuya's to win. His performance as Fred Hampton is just so powerful. He sounds like him, like how he transforms into this great orator in the film. He's just so fantastic. But I also wouldn't sleep on Sacha Baron Cohen either. There's a lot of people singing his praises for The Trial of Chicago 7. He did a really great job. Me personally, I think it's between Daniel Kaluuya and Leslie Odom Jr., but I'm riding with Daniel.
So I guess, I paused there or hesitated there because for me, I think I'm torn between, I love Sasha's performance in The Trial of Chicago 7. I love Daniel's performance in Judas and the Black Messiah. And I love Leslie Odom Jr. in One Night in Miami. But I don't know, when I think of Sacha Baron Cohen, I often think of a jokester, someone who's, you know, always doing these comedies. And he was very serious in this particular film, loved it. But like you said, Daniel Kaluuya's transformation into Fred Hampton for Judas and the Black Messiah, it's undeniable. I mean, he nailed it. And I mean, it was a very powerful, powerful performance. And then of course, Leslie Odom Jr., I told him in our interview a few weeks ago that I could not imagine anyone else playing Sam Cooke in this film but him. So, you know, it's like you said, it's between those guys, and we're gonna see how that goes. All right, Sharonda, so let's get into these snubs. Was kind of surfing through social media, just trying to look and see what people were saying, different things that I had been hearing in different chat rooms and things of that nature. Lovecraft Country received, I only think that they received just one nomination, but the actors did not receive any nominations at all. Spike Lee's The Five Bloods, Bridgerton, which was just a fan favorite. I mean, I think everybody was talking about that series on social media, as well as the HBO series, I May Destroy You, and then P-Valley. I mean, that was one of those dramas that came out that I think people were trying to figure how they were going to take this play that had garnered so much attention and how they were going to put it on television. But I think Katori Hall did an amazing job in bringing that from the stage to the screen. So your thoughts on these snubs and these shows not being nominated this year?
You know, it's just crazy to think that we had one of the best years, you know, from, you know, performances by Black leads, Black led television series, movies. I mean, to think that a film like The Five Bloods, with an amazing performance from Delroy Lindo and, you know, also to Chadwick and Jonathan Majors, it's just crazy to fathom that they didn't pick up not one nomination. But also, too, Lovecraft Country has some of the best acting that I've seen on television in a Black series in such a long time that it's just crazy. Even P-Valley, the performances, I May Destroy You, like, with such a serious subject matter, you know, that is so relevant today, but especially being led by a Black woman, I just think it's crazy that these shows weren't recognized. Or, you know, in Lovecraft, how can you recognize them for being such a great television series, but then not recognize the amazing performances that help elevate the material that was given to them? It's really just a travesty at this point.
And your thoughts about Bridgerton, because everyone, which I probably should not say this, but I have not seen that show. What? But every, I know, right? But everyone has talked about that series. Your thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, I mean, Reggae, I think he did such a fantastic job in Bridgerton and just the phenomenon that, you know, it has had, and also too how they're trying to push boundaries with this colorblind casting. It's crazy to think that they weren't recognized in any category. But I think that they still have a lot more traction to go with other award shows. They picked up a nomination, I believe, for the SAG Awards. So, you know, I'm just hoping that hopefully with these next award shows and, you know, Critics' Choice, you know, the other award shows will hopefully rewrite the wrongs of the Globes.
And let's talk about your thoughts on these award shows. You know, because of Corona, we've not been able to get together physically and everything has been virtual. Your thoughts on the production quality? Do you think that the shows are better? I actually find them better, to be honest with you, but just your thoughts on that. And do you think that we'll continue in this virtual space for these shows?
Yeah, I think they run a lot more smoother just because it is at home. So they can predict more. It's not the unpredictable of what's going to happen with everyone in this room at the same time. But I'm excited to watch it. Like, who doesn't want to just escape and watch all the nice little rich celebrities in their outfits and just try to forget about the fact that we're in a pandemic still? But I think that we're still going to continue to see these virtual award shows. We're not out of the woods yet. You know, we're still waiting on millions of Americans to be vaccinated for, you know, to protect us against COVID-19. So I think the virtual award shows are definitely here to stay for this year.
All right, Sharonda Williams from Pairwait, thank you so much for being our guest today on Upfront, and cannot wait until February 28th for the Golden Globe Awards. They'll be airing at 8 p.m. on NBC. So I will see you there virtually.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Life Lux Jazz Experience, November 4th through the 8th, 2021 in Los Cabos, Mexico. Performers include Eric Roberson, Mesa, Mike Phillips, Hiroshima, and is hosted by Mark Curry. There will also be health and wellness activities and a sunset cruise. Information is available at lifeluxjazz.com.
I used to visit all the very gay places, those come what may places, where one relaxes on the axis of the wheel of life, to get the feel of life, from jazz and cocktails. The girls I knew had sad and sullen gray faces.
This is Lisa Arendelle, and you're listening to Ray Cornelius on Upfront.
My next segment comes from a recent AFCA roundtable discussion with the stars and director of the new film, Passing. It is a screen adaptation of Nella Larsen's book of the same name and follows two high school friends whose renewed acquaintance ignites a mutual obsession that threatens both of their carefully constructed realities as black women passing for white during the roaring 1920s. Oscar-nominated actress Ruth Negga stars as the film's central character, Claire Kendry, whose racist white husband doesn't know her true black identity. Here's what she revealed about taking on such a troublesome character.
What attracted me to Claire, and this is not in opposition to Mildred at all, was her irrepressibility, really, in the face of the choice that she made to pass. And in making that choice, what does it erase? How does it derail your life? How does it affect your sense of self? How unmooring that is, how untethering it is to feel so isolated and alone bearing this dreadful secret. And the longing that inspires to go home and to belong. And also what her sort of re-engaging with the community that she left, what is the ripple effect of that? And we see that quite clearly in with her relationship with Irene. But what made me thrilled with Claire really was that she refuses to let that choice rob her of joy and an appetite for life. And, you know, when you historically look at the tragic mulatto narrative, you always feel that they are tragic, but Claire doesn't feel tragic. You know, the circumstances are tragic, but she herself isn't. You know, her capacity for engagement with life is extraordinary. And her persistence in that, despite this strictures of this construct called race that she has tried to elude successfully and quite recklessly in many ways, but what that also has cost her, because there's definitely an undertone of melancholy in her, you know? She's striving to belong and striving to find the goodness in life, but yet at what risk, you know? It's dangerous. But then she in herself is dangerous. What she represents to both communities is quite dangerous, I feel. And that's a very potent sort of energy, I think, in our film.
Director Rebecca Hall also explains the inspiration behind the film's black and white motif as opposed to color.
Well, there are a ton of reasons. But mostly, it occurred to me that the most interesting way to make a movie about colorism was to take the color out of it and make it an abstraction. Because I think then you're in a conceptual space where these categories become metaphorical, but also important, which is, you know, in the same way that you watch a black and white movie and your eye makes a process of translation. We know that the world isn't black and white, but we exist it. Similarly, oddly, when we look at race, we funnel people into these categories and nobody's actually black and white, and film isn't actually black and white, it's gray. So the metaphor sort of kind of keeps compounding in on itself and becomes, I think, a much more interesting space for it. I also thought that there was something, it was incredibly important to me. There's a history of these movies in Hollywood, small, but a history of them. And they're nearly always white actors cast in the roles of the people who are passing. It felt to me incredibly important, not just to have, obviously to cast black women, but also to cast women who were correct for the roles and not necessarily because they were capable of passing. And there is a certain, you know, there is a certain amount of, because there's an abstraction in black and white and grayscale and skin tone, you can with light and shadow and play, make things shift in a way that heightens the performative nature of all this stuff. Like, you know, in a sense, I wanted the film to be passing too. I wanted the film to be performative and the film to have a kind of look. So that explains the black and white also. I always think of that scene at the beginning that, you know, I think Ruth looks fantastic with the blonde wig and there's a whole transformation there. But I think there's this moment in the hotel room, you know, when they're sat there with, and the white man enters the room. And up until that point, I always feel like a 2021 audience is looking at this film and they're looking at Tessa Thompson and they're like, well, I know her to be a black woman. There's no ambiguity about that. I know her to be a black woman. But in that moment, when the white man walks into the room, he in a sense has the power in this society, in this racist society, to dictate what he wants to see. And so from his perspective, he sees what he wants to see. She's a white woman because she's sitting there with my wife. Why would it be other? It's context. And for me in black and white, I think that point is driven home. In color, I think it sort of makes him look a bit like, what's he looking at? Or, you know, and I always found that to be more interesting actually with Tessa than, you know, with someone that could be more obviously white passing. So the black and white is many reasons. And the final reason for it, since I'm just going to keep rolling, my sort of love of cinema goes back to old Hollywood and sort of black and white movies that had often female-centric stories and narratives. And for me, I was like, well, this is the film that didn't get to be then. So let's honor that by making it now. But I didn't want it to be nostalgic. I didn't want it to look like a museum piece. So, and that came with use of sound and composition and all these other things. But, you know, there was a part of me that was like drawing on my cinematic influences as well.
Catch the full conversation with Rebecca Hall and the stars of Passing at WCLK.com.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the Atlanta History Center, presenting Black Citizenship in the Age of Jim Crow, now through February the 28th. Created by the New York Historical Society in collaboration with the National Museum of African American History and Culture, the exhibition explores stories of the historic fight for Black freedom and justice. Lead support for the exhibition is provided by the National Endowment for the Humanities. Information available at Atlanta History Center.
All the smoke in the air, feel the hate when they stare.
This is Omar Dorsey, a.k.a. Hollywood of Queen Sugar, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
You just heard Fight For You featuring her. The song comes from the soundtrack of Judas and the Black Messiah, which debuts this weekend in theaters and on HBO Max. The film tells the story of FBI informant William O'Neill, who infiltrates the Illinois Black Panther Party and is tasked with keeping tabs on their charismatic leader, Chairman Fred Hampton. A career thief, O'Neill revels in the danger of manipulating both his comrades and his handler, Special Agent Roy Mitchell. The film stars Daniel Kaluuya as Chairman Fred Hampton, as well as my last guest, Lakeith Stanfield, as Bill O'Neill. I caught up with him this week to chat about his controversial character and more.
Ray Cornelius.
Lakeith Stanfield, man, congratulations on this amazing film and congratulations on your Entertainment Weekly magazine cover.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I love turtlenecks.
Yeah, as you can see, I'm rocking one right now. So, I got to ask, you know, this movie, you know, you're playing the story of a real person, someone who actually lived. And when I thought about it, I was looking at the contrast of your career so far. You went from Jimmy Lee Jackson to William O'Neill. So how did you prepare to play someone that we hate in this film?
Well, I hated him too when I first learned about him. Which was through this script, actually, in detail. I saw him briefly on the Eyes on the Prize the segment that they had when I originally watched the documentary, which was years ago when I was a teenager. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. I don't even want to talk about him. And saw him again pop up in this, but I didn't think I'd be playing him. When I first heard the script, I thought I'd be playing Chairman Fred Hampton. So I got the script and I was like, thank you, Shaka. This is amazing. I'm going to start getting into it right now. I'm going to start eating it, blah, blah, blah. He's like, wait, no. We want you to play William O'Neill. And I was like, what? Are you serious? You want me to play this guy? Why do I have to play this? My desire to be a part of a story that would uplift this, the legacy of Chairman Fred Hampton, and my desire to challenge myself would ultimately bring me to take on the role.
Yeah, and I want to ask you, how did you play him without judging him? Because I know a lot of times, as you know, actors, you guys are playing all these various characters that you personally don't agree with their actions or their mindset. But how do you play them without any type of a restriction or regard, with no judgment?
Well, you got to get over yourself. You got to leave your ego at the door, and you know, realize it's bigger than you, and it's bigger about your bigger than your opinions. This is something else, and then. You know, for me, it's also finding the humanity in the character. I didn't have much information about him, but I did get my hands on a long form version of the interview from Eyes on the Prize, which was a little over an hour long. And it just gave me a little bit of insight, what I needed to know. And verbatim one time, he even said, like, I feel bad about what I did, but I had to continue to play the role. So for me, that gave me a little bit of context as to how I would approach this character. Is that, you know, the whole time he's a little bit internally conflicted, and I wanted to kind of show that, but also create somewhat of a balance in the character in terms of showing just how, you know, he might have been disconnected from the ideologies, and he might have also been a thrill seeker who just liked to stir up trouble and trying to infuse all those things.
I have to say, that scene the night before the raid, you know, the look in your eyes, and I think that it's all, you know, for actors, it's all in the eyes. That look was just, I had never seen that from you before. Can you take us back to that night when you guys were shooting that, and what was going through your mind?
Yeah, it was a tough night for everybody. The energy was heavy, and it was the 50th anniversary of Chairman Fred Hampton's death, which is crazy. And we were in a house that was so beautifully decorated by set decoration and everything. The costumes were great, makeup was great. It was like you were zapped back into the time. And great, here I am having to play this guy. But before that scene happened, we used to have another scene in there, which colored the reason why I was in such turmoil at that time. O'Neill had been kicked out of the Black Panther Party. And in order to get his way back in the party, he basically put on a performance where I was at Chairman Fred's doorstep, profusely crying, like guttural snot crying, let me back in. I want to just be a Panther. I promise I'll be a good Panther. And then Fred lets me back in. So then once I get back in, I'm walking into the house, is where I meet Jermaine Fowler's character, who's like, hey man, you're a new guy? And I'm like, oh. So without that scene, the context is a little bit different because you would have been able to see the transition happen. But because we have people that are part of the film that helped us try and get to as honest a version as we could, that was in the original film. But I guess they didn't want to show O'Neill being that sympathetic or that, you know, closely aligned with Chairman Fred Hampton and making him become emotional. They didn't want that frequency, so they ended up cutting that out. But yeah.
And real quick, what was it like being reunited with your Get Out brothers, Daniel Kaluuya, as well as Lorel Howery?
It's great. I love them. I love both of them. it was dope. You know, sometimes, honestly, for me, I don't like being in the same movies as people as I was before, because it, to me, sometimes it dilutes the illusion. Like, I want the illusion in the film to be like, oh yeah, we haven't seen these people. But sometimes when you're all in the same movie together, it's kind of distracting. So I didn't really like that part at first, but then once I got on set, I'm like, yo, I love these dudes. And like, this is amazing. So I'm not even really mad at it.
Lakeith, thank you so much. And congratulations on this amazing film.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ray Cornelius.
Watch the full conversation with Lakeith Sandfield at WCLK.com and catch Judas and the Black Messiah in theaters and on HBO Max this weekend. Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, Sharonda Williams, Rebecca Hall, Ruth Naga, and Lakeith Stanfield. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman. Please join us next week for another exciting edition of Upfront, where I talk to award-winning singer Andra Day about portraying Lady Day in the United States versus Billie Holiday.
I carried her with me in my life, you know, so I am her when I'm at home.
If you like today's show, please hit us up at WCLK.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.